Tom, I brought this list of games back from the future, and now it's erased.
Of course it's erased!
But what does that mean?
It means your gaming future hasn't been written yet. No one's has. Your gaming future is whatever you make it, so make sure you play some good ones.
So Tom, 2018 has been a crazy year for everything.
2018 has felt like 20 years in 1 year.
But these last like 3 months just seem to have gone just like boom, really fast. Like we were at summer, mm-hmm. winter. Like there was no like fall, in at least in our area.
I like get reminded about movies that came out in February and I'm like, oh yeah, that was this year. It's been brutal. This has been a very brutal year, seriously.
Yeah. It seems like 2 years ago we actually sat down and did a review on Ready Player One.
Right? Remember when that came out? Oh.
I just bought that on Black Friday, so.
Nice.
I'm excited to finally go back and watch it now.
I still like it. Whatever.
Oh, no. I understand. Like, people have a lot of hate for that movie, and I think it's. I like it as just a big nostalgic trip. You know what I mean?
Mm hmm. You know, but. I don't know. It's just, we were knee-deep in Ready Player One think pieces, and now we're knee-deep in, like, Green Book think pieces, and it's just like, mm-hmm. it feels, I just, time is just endless anymore.
So, we're talking about movies and stuff. What are some of the movies that really stood out for you this year?
My favorite movie right now of 2018, and will probably remain unless something truly wows me, was the Mr. Rogers documentary, Won't You Be My Neighbor?
Oh, I really want to see that.
It's so good. It'll make you happy and a little bit heartbroken in like the best ways. It's so yeah. It's beautiful. Like you really, really would enjoy it. Hmm. How about you?
So far this year.
Mm-hmm.
Now I know we had Infinity War.
Mm-hmm.
But Teen Titans Go to the Movies is probably my favorite movie that came out this whole year.
Okay. Okay.
It just hit every nail on the head that I wanted in a movie. I haven't loved the movie this much since I saw Scott Pilgrim.
Oh, back dang. In the day. Dang. So the best movie in nearly a decade for you.
Yes. Nice. Yes. Nice. And the movie is fantastic. Mm-hmm. The references are amazing. It's so much adult humor in a kid's movie that like it just is a whole different level of what I expected to happen from, let's face it, a DC movie. And if you're a fan of Back to the Future stuff, there is a huge Back to the Future montage in the middle of the movie that is perfect. It's probably one of the funniest parts of the entire movie.
Mm-hmm.
But man, I cannot recommend people to watch this movie like more. Everyone I see, I'm always like, you need to watch this movie. You need to watch this movie. You need to watch this movie.
You've yelled at me on several occasions. I know I need to see it, but you make me feel bad about it.
And out of everybody I've talked to about this movie, one person has actually watched it. And when he came in to work the next day, he saw me. He's like, you were right. You were absolutely right. And then we've been quoting the movie ever since. And that came out months ago.
Nice.
It's already out on DVD and Blu-ray right now.
I have a lot of catching up to do from this year.
Yeah.
And like, I always like laugh to myself because like I go and I publish my top 10 lists and I'm like, this is it. This is definitively. And then like in the early months of the very next year, I'll start catching up on things I missed. And it's like, oh, this is actually better than a lot of things on my list. Mm-hmm. It's similar to my gaming life, funnily enough. You know, I spent a lot of my years in gaming playing games I missed in previous years. So, you know, in kind of summarizing my 2018 gaming experience, I got to tell you, I've got a lot of opinions about things that aren't even from this year.
All right. Well, then, this is A Cast of the Past, where best friends get together to talk about old games in a new light. Today, we're going to take a trip back to 2018.
And beyond.
As always, I'm Josh.
And I'm Tom. So yeah, this will be a 2018-centric podcast in that we're going to discuss our favorite games released this year and our favorite games that we played in this year, but that may not necessarily be from 2018.
Right. Correct.
Correctamundo.
So let's start with the best games that came out this year, Tom, because we want to try to, you know, we have all these games coming out now in 2018, and I know we have a big game coming out in 2 days from us recording this, which is going to be Super Smash Brothers. So I'm just going to say it's great.
Yeah, I think the bias is so strong with us that it's probably better that we're not even, like, it's not a contender because I'm going to play it forever, you know, like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can finally not play my Wii U anymore.
I'm so poised to just love it that it's not even fair to rank it.
Yeah, and apparently there's rumors that at the Game Awards they're going to announce the Metroid Prime trilogy for the Switch, and if that's true, I'm going to lose my shit.
So yeah, like 2019 is already looking really good. I'm
cool with it.
Boom. But yeah, this was a pretty good year overall. I think while we're on the Switch, I think this year really helped to justify its lifespan. It saw a lot of Wii U ports, but it also saw a lot of really good games get added to it that said, this console is going to stick around for a while.
Yeah.
And then what would you say about the broader console scene, Josh? How do you feel 2018 was?
I think this year really was, and I know we say it a lot, it was the year of the indies. There is so many indie titles that came out this year that were just one after another, just bang, 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 that really surprised a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But now from the, like, August to December timeframe, man, we are just in such an overload of games that it's just, like, I don't know how anyone's going to actually be able to catch up and play all these games and beat all these games in such a short time frame.
Mm-hmm.
You had Assassin's Creed Odyssey, which is getting rave reviews. You had Tomb Raider come out. You have Red Dead. You have the Call of Duty game. You have Spider-Man. You have Smash Brothers. You have Pokemon that came out. Like, it's just so much that got released at one time. And that's just this part. We still have the beginning of the year where we had Monster Hunter. We had God of War. We had Far Cry 5. We had Ni No Kuni 2. We had Dragon Ball FighterZ. Detroit Become Human. Soul Calibur 6. Mega Man 11. Like, Sea of Thieves came out this year.
Did it? I believe it, honestly, because I can't keep track of this year.
March 20th, 2018.
Oh,
this year, for how fast it went, seems so long now.
Oh,
we had Mario Party, Overcooked 2.
Great year. This is a great year.
It is a really good year, yes. It is very, very good.
So here's what I want to ask you, Josh. Just, you know, there's probably clearly too many games to name, but just to get us started, what was, like, probably the first game in 2018 that made a true impression on you? Hit me up. What do you got?
The first game that really took me by storm and just blew my mind from the start of it, and is my favorite game of this year, is Celeste.
Okay.
A little indie title came out of nowhere. I was browsing the internet one day and everyone's losing their mind over this indie title that got a perfect 10 out of 10 on IGN and a whole bunch of these other game related websites. It was sitting at like a 94% on Metacritic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was like, what is it about this game that everyone's just losing their mind over? And this was released in January of 2018 by Matt Makes Games, which is a very small company. I know we talked in an episode that hasn't been released yet about how a certain game made me feel like games are art.
Yes, yes.
This game here really took that and made me feel things that hit so close to home. I know I've posted up on our Facebook page before about this game and the impact it had on me just playing it. And it's about this young woman named Madeline who is going through all these trials and tribulations climbing this mountain, and she's going through doubt and worry and fear and anxiety and depression and stuff like that. And the way that it's handled in this game is just ridiculously good and creative, and it makes you feel like you are there with her and you see her, but you can relate to her as well if you've ever dealt with any of these symptoms in life. And when the game opens up, you climb through a little tutorial area, and you get up to this little shrine, and it said, this is a monument for all those who perished in the climb. And it's pretty much all the people who've lost the fight to depression or anxiety and stuff like that. This is a game that's dedicated to them.
Mm-hmm.
And as you're playing through and you're realizing the things that she's going through and the battle that she has in the game, it just blew my mind, that indie game that's pixelated could mean so much and hit on so many heartstrings at one time. It's crazy.
Yeah, it does sound very beautiful. From what I've seen of it, I haven't admittedly played it yet, but I think just from looking at it, that the gameplay looks incredibly fun and challenging. But just knowing that it has such a positive, uplifting message behind it, and that like it's an encouraging game, you know, not like... I enjoy games that kind of push their difficulty on you, because like they're fun in how they're challenging. But this seems like a game that like it's challenging, but it doesn't want you to get discouraged and not play. You know, it's like, hey, just stick with it, and we're here to like be with you along the way, not like, you know, get good, noob.
Right. So at the beginning of the game, there's actually like a little bit of a difficult like jump that you have to make. And when you do, the ground gives out behind you, and like she's like panning and huffing and puffing and stuff like that. And text messages appear on the top of the screen and says, you can do this. And it's pretty much like the game encouraging you not to use the assist mode, showing you that this is going to be difficult and this is going to be rough, but you can make the climb. Like... kind of pushing you in a way of when you think that, yo, I'm going to have to give up. I'm going to have to go and use the easy mode. And the game's telling you, like, no, you got this. Like, it's somebody kind of, like, encouraging you to continue on with your journey. Like, it's just so... The smallest little details of what this game does is just insane and incredible. And it's nominated for Game of the Year right now. And I am just all hands on deck pushing for this game to win Game of the Year.
Very cool. Yeah, that's great to hear. Like you said, it was another strong year for indie gaming, and I'm glad that the bar keeps getting set so high. You know, it encourages other developers to really think strongly.
Mm-hmm. How about you? What caught your eye at the beginning of the year?
So the earliest game for me was one that I actually had on my radar for a while. It was Dragon Ball FighterZ, or FighterZ, I guess. I thought it was FighterZ with the hard Z. But who knows?
Like
anyway.
Like a 90s Z.
Yeah, like the Hardy Boys, Dragon Ball FighterZ. But yeah, this game caught my eye with how it was the first and foremost thing was it was finally a modern Dragon Ball fighting game on a 2D plane, a la Street Fighter and the best Mortal Kombat. The thing about Dragon Ball Z games for years that it always like bummed me out was they tried to be 3D fighters, and I always just found it really imprecise. And with this, they just simplify it, and they're like, okay, you're locked onto a stage on a 2D plane, like, in my opinion, the best fighting game should be, go. And it's got all the fast-paced action that a Dragon Ball Z episode would contain. The art style is this perfect, like, cel-shaded technique that replicates the general look of the characters from the show, but also makes them, like, more dynamic and, like, with that third dimension. And it's just fun. Like, I've seen plenty of reviews for the game use this phrase, but it's an easy-to-learn but difficult-to-master game. You can go into it mashing buttons, and you won't do great, but you'll still, like, trigger enough cool animations or unique moments to have fun with it. But the more you put into the game, the more you really do get out of it. And I played matches with my brother, who I spent years watching the show with. I try to do a decent round of matches online. Typically, you know, got my ass kicked every time. But... It's so satisfying and fun, and no match ever like unfolds the same way. And to be honest with you, I played a lot of it this year, and maybe this is a little bit of a heresy, but I haven't gotten too deep into the story mode. I know like a ton about it. I played like a little bit of it, but it's a game that's just so strong in its core playability that I've gotten so much out of it just playing it with people. Or just trying to do the challenge modes and stuff. But yeah, really terrific, really great. Easily one of my most enjoyable games of the year from how much fun I had with it.
Yeah, from what I played of it, and like I said, I only played a couple matches of the game itself. It reminds me a lot of Marvel vs. Capcom. But I feel like this is the Marvel vs. Capcom 4 that we needed. Okay. Not the one that we got.
Okay.
Because that one that came out was not that good. And I think this kind of... put the spotlight on that, saying that there's other companies out there that can make games similar to that and make them better.
Oh, okay.
Because I mean, man, I just love using Piccolo. Like,
yeah.
What's your team?
My triple threat is my boy Cell, who I just want to say, you talked about like the impact this game had on the fighting community. When Dragon Ball FighterZ was at EVO, those were some of the best streams to watch, up to and including the finals, where Cell's pre-fight animation of him powering up and yelling turned into a crowd chant, the Cell yell. I was delighted. If you haven't seen it, look it up on YouTube. Find EVO Cell yell. It's so great. But yeah, my three were always Perfect Cell, Trunks, and Gotenks.
Okay.
That's my lineup.
I got Piccolo, Goku, and Android 18.
Okay. Which version of Goku?
Super Saiyan.
Okay, nice.
Yeah, I like to keep him just OG.
OG, you know what I mean? Yeah, no blue Goku, no blue Ku.
No.
Yeah. So yeah, there was that. Trying to think, what else did you play this year?
So for the rest of this year, I got two more games that really kind of come to mind. Mm-hmm. In September, it's the game that made me rebuy a PlayStation 4.
And that was so I could
Spider-Man. Spider-Man.
Next generation Spider-Man.
Man, was this game great.
Mm-hmm.
It did what Arkham Asylum did for Batman games.
You mean it made you feel like Spider-Man?
Yeah. Like, swinging through the city, like, I had a smile on my face every time. Like, it just, when you're going through and, like, you're not, like, doing any missions or anything like that, and you're, like, just having, like, perfect swings and stuff like that, and the music is, like, it's, like, a superhero theme song actually playing as you're just, like, swinging through every time. Like, it, like, just kind of fades in as you're going through, and, like, it just makes you feel so much more heroic in the game.
Mm-hmm.
The costume design for Spider-Man is great. The performances were great. The villains were awesome in it. Some amazing cutscenes in that game too. There's a really awesome fight scene in the game. I don't want to spoil it, but it's towards the end. The one thing I noticed with the sound design of that game, and it's more of just like the acting to it, they pretty much recorded all dialogue in that game twice.
Hmm.
So if you are doing something and say you're like just like standing around and Spider-Man's talking, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's talking normally and stuff like that, and then you start swinging. He starts, his lines then start to sound more out of breath.
Hmm.
And as he's running, it's like he's yelling as he's running or swinging and stuff like that. So they've recorded the audio several times for every character for those type of instances. And I was like, man, that's something so small and so simple that you don't think of. And I'm like, wait, he actually sounds like out of breath from like swinging and running and stuff like that. And then, like, he lands and, like, you can hear him catching his breath as he's talking and it goes back into normal dialogue. And I'm like, man, that's just so creative and awesome. But, yeah, I've never played a Spider-Man game where I felt like Spider-Man.
Gotcha.
And Insomniac Games, man, they blew it out of the water.
Hey, that's a really killer level of detail. You got to admire that. Just being that precise about it and making sure nothing slips under the radar. Awesome. That's very cool.
And I will give a shout out to the Stan Lee cameo that's in the game. That is fantastic as well.
Our boy Stan, rest in peace.
Never forget.
All right. So, the next game on my list that really stuck out, and I'm going to say this, I can't believe like I'm going to like praise a game this backhandedly, but I had a ton of fun with Pokemon Let's Go Eevee. While acknowledging that the game was so easy, but you know, I think I needed just like an easy laid back gaming experience around the time this came out. You know, it's a remake of Pokemon Yellow, as we've discussed previously on this show, which is a game where you get a lot of Pokemon for free, a lot of like rare Pokemon for free. So it kind of makes the game a little bit easy to walk through. And Pokemon Yellow specifically, they kind of make your companion Pokemon, whether you buy the Pikachu version or the Eevee version, they make them pretty OP. But it's got so much charm. Being buddies with your starter Eevee or Pikachu is just the best. It always puts a smile on your face unless you're some kind of animal-hating monster. I think the mechanics that they've implemented are pretty good updates for the series. I love being able to see Pokemon in the grass and not just have random encounters. It takes a lot of the stress out of walking places, I'll admit it. You know, like, I didn't walk through Mount Moon on the edge of my seat worried I was going to be attacked by Zubats. I could just walk around the little jerks.
Yeah, and how much easier was Victory Road?
Yeah, seriously. It made it a much more pleasant experience. There's still a little bit of challenge at certain points. As long as you're not leaning into the hand-holding the game does. I feel like I'm pooping on it while praising it, but, you know, like...
No.
There's points in the game where you can go to Poke Centers and make trades with people, and they give you the Alola, the Pokemon Sun and Moon versions of several classic Pokemon. Like, you get the Ice Vulpix or the Psychic Raichu, but the trades you get are always, like, really overpowered. And then those Pokemon grow faster because they were traded. So you can end up with a beast team very quickly in this game and kind of steamroll through it. But I get it. It's targeted at younger players. To a certain degree, they're trying to make this like this could be someone's first experience with the game. And that's awesome. Everyone needs to have their first experience with any franchise. So I'm not going to deny anybody that. But its ease aside, it was very nice going back into that world. And seeing it brought to life in 3D, seeing a few new game mechanics thrown in, and just, it's a pleasant game. And sometimes you just need pleasant games, you know?
Yeah. I got Pikachu.
I got Eevee.
Took me about 45, 48 hours, somewhere around there, to fully complete it, all 151 and the Elite Four. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
I loved going back into that world. I enjoyed everything about the game. I think after the third gym, it got a little too grindy.
Okay.
There was a little bit of a difficulty curve there, but it didn't deter me away from playing the game. I still enjoyed my time with it. It took me so long, I think, to finish it because I went on kind of a leveling spree at one point in time. I have, like, I think, like, 15 or 16 Pokemon right now over level 70. Like, I just went on, like, a whole big leveling spree before I went into the end of the game.
Okay.
And I kind of crushed the Elite Four by that time, but I just enjoyed my time with it.
Yeah.
I didn't use my starter. I didn't use Pikachu at all. Actually, I caught a Pikachu, evolved it up to Raichu, but then never really used him. My team mainly consisted of Jolteon, Kabutops, Amistar, Nidoking, Rhyhorn, or Rhydon, a couple others. And Alakazam.
There's a lot of really cool little surprises in here, and even like little updates to the Yellow story. It's not all the same, which I thought was really good. It was really good.
There's a couple characters I was surprised to see in the game.
Mm-hmm.
I've ran into two that I was really surprised to see, and there's a third one somewhere as well that I have to... I have to do a certain quest inside the game to be able to find the third hidden person that I'm looking for. But,
most importantly, the reason that it's so high up in prestige for me is that there's points in the game where you actually play as Eevee. So, you know, that's pretty close to Game of the Year contender for me.
Now, Becca actually got the Eevee version of the game, too. And this is her first Pokemon game, and she's absolutely loving it.
Becca's a smart person.
Yeah. She was actually telling me, like, this whole weekend, she has it planned out where she's hopefully going to try to beat the game this weekend coming up.
Mm-hmm.
If she's enjoying it, that's like a big praise to Nintendo, because she's not huge into the RPG style games.
Right.
And this is kind of the introductory into Pokemon for her. So when the next generation comes out next year, she should be able to kind of jump right into it.
Okay. So what would you say kind of rounded out your year, Josh? What capped off 2018 for you in a positive light?
I was bouncing between two games towards the end of the year. I started playing Dead Cells a little bit to see what everyone was talking about. And it's a good game. Mm-hmm. It's a roguelike game, but...
IGN said it was pretty good, but then they seemed like they changed their mind about it. And then they said it was a good game again.
Yeah. Yeah,
I don't
it's
know if
weird.
You, I don't know
it?
If you know about all that.
Yeah, yeah. but the last game that I've pretty much put all of my time and effort into is The Messenger.
Mm.
And oh my God, is that game awesome!
So give me a little bit about The Messenger.
Okay, how do I put this? Imagine Ninja Gaiden mixed with Super Metroid.
Ooh,
it is fantastic, and I will say it is probably one of the funniest games I've played in a long time. I was laughing so hard at some of the dialogue in this game that I had to go back and replay areas to show Becca so she could see, and then she was laughing uncontrollably as well at it. Like, it's just so good, and it breaks the fourth wall the perfect ways. Like, it's not like Deadpool type of breaking the fourth wall where it's like very obnoxious. It's more like it kind of knows it's a video game, but it doesn't at the same time. Like, it's like it makes a reference to something and they're like, what? And it's like, oh no, never mind. Like, it just kind of like changes the subject really quick. But oh my God, it is so good. And then when you think the game's over, you're only about 25% of the way through the game, and I was like, no. Like, there's a pivotal moment in the plot that something happens and the game changes.
Okay.
And it changes for the better. So it's like everything you learned and stuff, you're like, okay, yeah, I understand. I got this. I understand it. And then they kind of just flip everything on its head. And now, like, the kind of the laws of physics in the game change because something else changes. And I don't want to spoil it, but in the game, like, when it happens, they even say, like, didn't you watch the trailer? He's like, no, why? And it's like, never mind then, because in the trailer, it kind of spoils what happens in the game.
Okay, so I definitely
it's
need
really
to,
funny.
I definitely need to avoid the trailer then.
Yeah, no, well, it's funny because, like, if you, that's the thing, if you play it and then go back and watch the trailer, you're like, oh, okay, it makes perfect sense now. But yeah, this game, I know right now it's being nominated for Indie Title of the Year at the Game Awards as well, and it's going up against Celeste, which in this category, I really hope The Messenger takes it because I want Celeste to take Game of the Year. But I love both of them. These are like, these two games have been the games that I've been constantly going back to and replaying over and over again. Even after I beat them, I've gone through and replayed them. Like, Celeste and The Messenger are like, oh, they're so close to like being like Shovel Knight tier of gaming for me right now.
That's high praise. Let me just say
I know.
From you, that's high praise.
These two games are like Shovel Knight tier. And there's actually a video game showcase later this week for a group that I listen to called Kind of Funny. And The Messenger is going to be there. They're going to advertise stuff. And I hope it's like DLC story mode for it. Because I want to go back into this world as quick as possible, and I'm super excited. But yeah, I highly recommend if even paying $20 for this game, that's too cheap.
Okay.
So
full price. Josh is on full price mode with this.
yeah, and that's me. You know, I'm a bargain hunter.
Gotcha.
So what rounded out your year, Tom?
Well,
I know you talked about Pokemon, but
I got to tell you, as predicted, the number one game of 2018, I called it. It came to pass. Kevin Toad Treasure Tractor was the game that raised the bar in 2018. Just kidding. I'm a bad Captain Toad fan. I haven't actually got to pick up the remake yet.
Oh, no.
But, like, I know. It's such a sure thing. I'm like, I'll just take
it. The only way you could have made that sound worse is if you said you only picked it up on the 3DS.
Well, I'll pick it up on both. Let me be clear about that. No, but my game of the year is unquestionably Red Dead Redemption 2.
Oh, no. Don't say that.
It is. It is beautiful. It looks beautiful. I'll give a little caveat that it doesn't entirely play beautiful, but it is...
It plays like a Rockstar game.
Exactly, I guess.
Super Ragdoll.
Yeah, Super Ragdoll 64. But no, it is so expansive, and there's so much to do. I haven't gotten lost in a game like this short-term since Breath of the Wild, long-term since the last Red Dead Redemption. I'm at a point in the story, not to get into, like, too specific spoilers, but, like, I've had this game for a little over 2 months now, I'm at a point in the story where, like, a key important character that Arthur Morgan, the protagonist, knows has been kidnapped and their life is in jeopardy. And I've spent, like, the last 2 weeks hunting and going on side quests because this world is so big and there's so much to discover. It's like, I'll save them later. You know, like, I just found this little seaside town with, you know, a little lighthouse. Like, I got to see if there's any cool fish in this little body of water, you know?
Right, it's, right.
And there's so much to explore. There's so much to do. The amount of just random organic things that happen in the world are so unique. I am absolutely in love with it. And it's so good. It's so absorbing. I love it. I really love it.
So, the big thing that's going to come down, and I think the game of the year for the Game Awards and a lot of websites, I think it's going to come down to three games for Game of the Year.
Okay.
And I think it's going to be a toss-up between Red Dead, Celeste, and God of War. I've played God of War, and I got halfway through it, and that game, like, it completely flipped that franchise on its head. Mm-hmm. Like, that game is a complete overhaul of what that franchise was doing. But I don't know. Everyone talks about how amazing Red Dead is, but, like, now it seems like people are, like, taking a step back, and I don't know if they're just looking through it through rose-tinted glasses.
I really can't say. Who knows? Every other awards body could just pull the golden joysticks, did, and give it to Fortnite. You know, just...
Yeah, well, see, just to
really,
the thing.
Just to, like, really light the internet on fire.
I understand why Fortnite would get it.
Oh, Fortnite,
I mean,
was...
It's not nominated, but, I mean, that's a game that's ever-changing.
Fortnite
so,
was
like,
the cultural juggernaut of this last year. It is unquestionably worthy of being called the game of the year.
And you think about it, every season is like an expansion pack. So, like, why can't an expansion pack receive a Game of the Year nomination?
Yeah. Like I said, I think in terms of popular culture, Fortnite is the biggest game of the year. And it deserves to be noticed for that. But I have put more time into Red Dead than I put into Fortnite. So personally for me, you know.
I understand. I just, like I said, I know, I've talked to a lot of people, and people love Red Dead. Mm-hmm. Like, they love it. And then there's people that are like, okay, yeah, well, I'm going, and now I'm tripping over rocks. And I'm going, and I'm doing this. And I'm going, and I'm doing this.
Its commitment to quote-unquote realism gets clunky from time to time.
Right, right.
There's this great meme of, like, a horse from Red Dead having a meltdown because it can't decide between two buttons that say... crashing into a tiny tree or tripping over a tiny rock. And it's true, because some of it's like, ugh. But when it's on fire, it's on fire.
Yeah. I don't know, though, if people are going to side with it after the whole crunch debacle.
Probably not. That is bull. I'll call that. You don't abuse workers like that.
Right. So it's one of those, like, do you reward them for abusing the workers? Do you not? And that's a whole different topic that we can get into one day, like on a side tangent. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I think it's going to come down to those three games. Now, I heard fantastic things about Assassin's Creed Odyssey, and I picked it up because of how people have been just praising this as probably the best Assassin's Creed game to be released. Mm-hmm. And I'm really excited for that, but I don't know.
I've been off Assassin's Creed for a long time, and
yeah, I played about half of Black Flag, and that was it.
Okay.
But since they've kind of changed it up, and now they're not doing it every year, and they're kind of taking a couple years off now. They even said, like, we're not making an Assassin's Creed game next year because of how good Odyssey's doing. We want to continue in that world, and I'm like, good, thank you. Let people breathe a little bit here. Hmm. But Tom, you talked about at the beginning of this, these are the games that we played this year, but we've also jumped into some games from the past.
Yes, it's kind of in the name of our show.
What have you been playing in the past, or have revisited or played for the first time that really, like, just took you by storm or surprised you?
So I had a lot of first times this year. My first kiss. A lot of first time gaming experiences. And one of the first big ones this year was actually a recommendation from you and our dear friend Brian. I played Final Fantasy 15 for the first time this year. So the first thing to note, this is the first Final Fantasy game I ever beat.
For those listening, Tom really doesn't play JRPGs other than Pokemon.
It's not that I don't like them. It's just I don't play them well. I get so absorbed in the stories that I start barrel-assing through the game. And then I always reach a point where it's like, oh, you should have been grinding. Now you're trapped here forever. And it's like...
Unlike Red Dead, where you don't do the story and you decide to pick flowers for hours.
It's not... That's an interesting thing to kind of examine about me. Why does that only happen to me in JRPGs and not other games?
It's because you're not wearing a cowboy hat. And in Final Fantasy 15, there's a character wearing a cowboy hat.
Oh my gosh. Oh, Josh, you've just cracked me. You've gotten to the root of Tom Peeler in this episode.
It's high noon
you've
somewhere.
You've examined me more than my therapist ever has. Well, that's been a cast of the past. No. Anyway, sorry. Final Fantasy 15. It is a gorgeous game, production-wise. It's stunning. The soundtrack is just this sweet, buttery symphony in your ears. So beautiful. The driving, fine. Sometimes a little tedious. If I ever had the option to fast travel, I took it. Sometimes it's cool to just kind of like, you know, watch the boys hanging out in the car. Overall, the boys, I should mention, are the best part of the game. Like, I don't remember ever playing a game since maybe Star Fox 64 where you gave so much of a dang about your companions. I think the story of Final Fantasy 15 is a little butchered because they've clearly split it up between the direct-to-DVD movie prequel and the direct-to-YouTube prequel anime series and the post-game DLC that they've been releasing in spurts. Like, it is not a complete narrative. But
yeah, I heard Final Fantasy 15 was the game that took forever to come out and the game that won't stop coming out.
Well, while we're talking about it, it's been canceled.
I know. Yeah, very sad.
All future DLC is canceled and the director left Square. So Final Fantasy 15 is now going to be an incomplete game for the rest of forever. And that sucks.
I don't really know if it's incomplete, though, because like I haven't jumped into the expansions to it, but I think the game itself is just fine. Like,
Yuna,
I think it's...
Yuna Freya was supposed to get a DLC story.
Oh, it's
and
true.
I feel she was one of the most underdeveloped characters in the game. Like, when she dies, spoiler for a two-year-old game, but when she dies, a spoiler because she's a woman in a Final Fantasy game, when she dies, she's given this cutscene that is stunning to look at. It is beautiful, but it feels kind of shallow because it's like, I didn't really get a sense of who this character was. Why is her death so impactful besides, you know, love interest? And it's like...
I don't think you understand, Tom. It set up the best boss battle in that entire game against the Leviathan.
Well, okay, it's true. I'm not saying that that's not great. That was great. Again, I feel like I'm being, like, backhanded. Final Fantasy XV experience stuck with me because it is fun, and the companion system does draw you into the world in a way where you really get attached to it. But it's a little flawed, and I think it's flawed in that they were clearly hoping to kind of milk this for a while.
Yeah.
And it kind of backfired on them because now the game will never be complete, and that's a bummer. But
not... Fantastic game. I platinumed it on the PlayStation 4.
Nice.
Did all the legendary missions at the end, during the end game to it. Great story. Actually, one of the only Final Fantasies I completed the entire way through. I've beaten a bunch of them, but man, that one's the one I kind of saw like everything. I wanted to explore everything in that game. The group, Gladius, Ignis, Wario... You know, our boys, they were great.
Don't you drag him into this.
No, but overall, Final Fantasy 15 is a great game. And people should play it because it is different than a lot of the other Final Fantasies out there. It's more Kingdom Hearts styled.
I mean, maybe that is why I enjoyed it. I'm a big Kingdom Hearts fan. Also, I am Prompto. Like, it's one of the few times I felt like a direct mirrored connection with a game character. I am so Prompto. So, he's my boy. How about you, Josh? What did you discover this year from years gone by?
So from the ancient years, a story-driven game that I did not expect to enjoy. It was recommended to me by one of my friends at work, Tio. I'll give him a shout out because he listens to the podcast. Life is Strange. Blew my mind. I played the first episode and I was like, this is not for me. And he's like, no, you played a second episode, and you're going to be hooked. I beat the second episode and then beat the third episode and beat the fourth episode immediately after that. Cause I just got jumped. I just got engulfed right into the story. And I was telling him what was going on in my game, and he was telling me like what he did the first time he played through, and our stories were, the games were completely different, which was awesome. It out Telltale'd Telltale.
Whoa.
Like it blew
by the
my
way,
mind.
By the way, rest in peace, Telltale.
Yeah, another thing that happened
this
year.
Yes, this long year, but continue.
Yeah, it just blew my mind. The story of Max and Chloe is probably one of the best friendship stories that I've seen in games in recent years. Very similar to the four guys from Final Fantasy 15. But yeah, man, it was a really good story. The fifth episode, like the last episode of that game, there's a part that drags a little bit, but the way that they include time travel in the game, like, because you find that out right at the beginning of the game that you can kind of travel through time. There's a thing at the end where you're in this like weird time loop, and oh my god, it is phenomenal the way that they do it. They actually like did time travel to the point where I was like, this is amazing and I want to keep doing this and I can't believe the story's unfolding the way it is, and oh my god, like so on and so on and so on. Yeah, I definitely recommend people to, if you haven't played it, go and play it. Like I said, the first episode's kind of just to get you to understand your main character. But after that, the second episode on, that game just gets much better and better and better. I have not jumped into Life is Strange 2 yet or Before the Storm. But yeah, I will highly recommend that if you haven't played it yet, Tom.
It's been on my to-do list for a long time. I'm glad to hear from someone whose taste I trust implicitly that it's very good. And it's pretty good that, how can I put it? It's pretty good to hear that someone inadvertently took up the mantle of Telltale. So
yeah,
hopefully that storytelling style can survive, you know, after Telltale has passed.
What else we got?
I finally played Middle Earth: Shadow of Mordor.
Oh,
and that is such a fun game.
Oh yeah.
I actually played both Shadow of Mordor and Shadow of War. I liked Shadow of Mordor better, beginning to end.
Okay.
Gameplay wise, it's such a fun experience. It's the best of Assassin's Creed and Arkham Asylum kind of distilled together into this like third person open world action game where the more powerful you get with skill trees, the more kind of powerful you feel as a player. Like you can start taking on armies of enemies in ways that just feel so satisfying to kind of flow through crowds and pull off perfect combos and everything. And if you're a Lord of the Rings fan, which I am a hardcore Lord of the Rings fan, it's an interesting little kind of like side story. I went into these thinking they were canon. I think I eventually discovered somewhere that they're not canon.
No.
But they get a little goofy with the lore, so I'm glad that they're not canon. But they play on the kind of imagery of the Peter Jackson Lord of the Rings movies to create some cool stuff. The story doesn't always like hold up in the best ways. There's a couple parts. There's literally like a section that they completely like skip over a huge event, which could have been like multiple levels in the game, but they're like, and then the hero went and did this, and now we're going to jump to the aftermath. And it's like, okay. Why? But okay, sure, your game. But yeah, if you're looking for like an action game that really revels in its mechanics. Oh, I almost got out of this without talking about the nemesis system in the game, the system through which enemies have their own little military system. And enemies can get promoted from your typical little kind of like common baddies to sergeants and then all the way up to generals. And you can mess with that ranking by like taking out a sergeant and watching the whole thing fall apart, or brainwashing a general and then ordering him to screw with his own underlings. So it's so unique how even if you do the story, you can go in and just play with the world. It's very cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I always wanted to jump into it. I'm not a huge Lord of the Rings fan, but like I heard these games were fantastic, very similar to the Arkham games.
I think they're honestly detached enough from the Lord of the Rings story that you can kind of get into it just as like a fantasy action game, you know?
Okay.
Yeah.
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 I'll probably jump into the first one then once I go through my back catalog of games that I have, but yeah.
I respect the fact that people have different levels of back catalogs, you know?
Yeah. Oh man, my back catalog's disgusting right now.
Oh, been there, buddy. So what else? What else did you dig out of the vault this year, John?
So it's not super, super old. It came out last year, but Hellblade, Senua's Sacrifice. I talked about what Celeste did for games when it comes to mental illness. This game here, whew, man, it is fantastic. It's a better version of Dark Souls. It's more enjoyable. It's not one of those get good mentalities. It's more like you can easily play this and enjoy it. The game really focuses around the main character, Senua'n, who is portrayed by the actress Melina Jurigan.
Okay.
She was actually someone who worked on the game, and they asked her to be like motion capture for this character. And her performance is one of the best performances I've ever seen in a game ever. So the big thing with this game is it's a psychological horror game.
Okay.
It's set in the like Nordic world. So like the main thing is you're going in to find Hela, and you're trying to kill Hela to bring back your dead boyfriend.
Okay.
And it is, oh my God, it's just so good, because the character itself, she suffers from, she feels like she's being cursed. So she's constantly hearing voices, and the voices don't stop in the entire game. So like as you're going through from the beginning of the game, there's always voices talking, where, what's going on over here, where's she going, how's she doing it? It's commenting on everything that you're doing in the game, and it's like 20 different voices talking to you at one time, and like you know that they're not there, but she's like reacting and talking to them, and like they're talking back to her, but it's not like real in the world. Like it's warning you about things that are coming up, and like it's just the way that it works. I would highly suggest watch some gameplay to it, because it's breathtaking. The fact that I think 20 people made this game, and it's one of the best looking games I've ever seen on the PlayStation 4. And one of the best voice acting and best motion capturing I've ever seen in a game. I highly recommend anyone to play this game. It's another game, like I said, that deals with mental illness, of psychosis and stuff like that. But, oh my God, it's one of those games when I got done with it, I sat the controller down and I was like, I love everything about this game. It's another one of those that just like it hits you in, I don't want to say the feels, but like it hits you in a way that's like, man, I didn't realize games could make me feel this way about somebody's psychosis. And like what people go through, and it kind of lets you think outside the box a little bit of like, man, someone suffers from this. But yeah, I would definitely recommend like watching some gameplay, picking it up right now. Physical copies just got released on Xbox One and PS4. And Ninja Theory just got picked up by Microsoft, by one of the companies that were acquired during E3.
Okay.
So
that sounds like, again, like another really deep experience that tries to make the gaming a little bit more of a nuanced, you know, I don't want to say the word experience twice, but, you know, for the player, you know, something very interesting to explore, something you take something away from. Cool.
Well, give me one last game, Tom.
Kind of in like the same light that you're saying, this year I played a game that kind of like asked me to probe a little deeper about the nature of its world and its characters, and that was Gone Home. A game which we covered on this very show, and which I think is just this stunning, beautiful, very uplifting game. It's a mystery where you play a girl who's come home for the first time in a long time. Her family has changed while she's gone, and in exploring the family house that her folks and her sister moved into while she was away, she's learning about the house for the first time, as we the player are, and as she kind of figures out what her family's been up to in the time that she hasn't been around them, you learn things about everybody, and you come to realize some like tragic and also beautiful things about how people grow, how they discover themselves, how people are connected or how they fall apart. It's so engrossing. It really is, like, it's a short, maybe 2 hour gameplay experience, a little, maybe a little longer if you're taking your time, but when you're done with it, like, I have not stopped thinking about it, even in just tiny capacities throughout the year.
Yeah.
Gone Home's great.
Yeah, definitely listen to our episode about Gone Home.
Mm-hmm.
It's so good that I played it. I recommended my wife to play it. I recommended Tom to play it, who recommended his girlfriend to play it. Mm-hmm. Like, it came full circle, and everyone had this, like, a little bit of a different, like, theory of what's going on in the game, but at the end, all felt the same about, like, one of the best gaming relationships.
Absolutely.
In recent memory.
And it's available on, like, everything. I saw Steve Gaynor on Twitter mentioning that it's coming out on iOS soon. So...
Great.
You could play Gone Home on your phone and your tablet, or maybe at least your tablet. I don't know. But
people should.
It's beautiful.
No, people should.
It is beautiful. You should play it. Really great experience. Arguably one of the best romances in gaming ever. And you don't even explicitly see the romance play out. You learn about it in journals and photos. But, I can't get over how great it is. Sam and Lonnie for life.
So, I'm going to... call your Sam and Lonnie, and I'm gonna raise you a Henry and Delilah.
Oh, really?
I am going to talk about the game that blew me away this year that I played through that I should have played 2 years ago when it got released, and that was Firewatch.
Ah, yes. Another, as they kind of a little bit dismissively call them, walking simulators.
Walking simulators. Yes, it is... probably one of the best relationships I've ever played in a game.
Okay.
And I can't talk too much about it without spoiling the game and how you get from point A to point B, but it is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
It is, you go in thinking like, okay, this is like a normal, like weird, like it's just like you're a park ranger. And you're out there just stopping fires in the middle of the park. And then, like, okay, there's a relationship possibly happening. And then there's like, oh, wait, what? And, like, there's something, like, supernatural that might be there that you're not 100% sure of. And then there is just a lot of crazy things that are happening in this game. And then there's another story that involves under it. Like, it keeps getting deeper and deeper and deeper as you keep playing through. Campo Santo made a fantastic game here. Yes, it's a walking simulator, but man, it's one of the best stories that I've played this year. And a lot of these games that I've played, like I said, have focused mainly on that story mode and made me feel something. And these characters here, this is probably one of the best relationships I've ever witnessed in a game. And I highly recommend everyone play it. And Tom, It's coming to the Nintendo Switch December 2018.
Oh.
So it should be out this month.
Oh, okay. Well, perfect. I have actually... My new rule has become wait and see if it comes out on the Switch. So, yeah, I'm definitely picking that up once it is available. That all sounds beautiful. Beautiful. I'm very excited.
December 17th, it comes out on the Switch. So, as of this release, it's already out. And hopefully Tom's already played it.
Oh, my God, I love Firewatch. Ah, you know. Yeah, that's awesome. That's very awesome to hear.
Yeah, it blew my mind. I was going to say Golf Story because Golf Story is just such a great game.
We could talk about Golf Story forever on this show.
I know. Golf Story could actually be its own episode once we get to the 3 year mark.
Yeah.
Of it being released. So stay tuned in a couple of years for Golf Story conversation because that's going to be good. But yeah, 2018 was crazy.
Mm-hmm.
2019 is shaping up to be ridiculous right now. I can't wait till like the January 25th when my remake of Resident Evil 2 comes out, which I've been waiting only like 15 years for. So that's going to be good.
I won't have time to play that because I'll be playing Kingdom Hearts 3, which I've only been waiting 14 years for this to come out.
Yeah.
A lot of long-awaited pieces of gaming history we're eager to have dumped in our laps. What else are you looking forward to next year? Just kind of brief little
bullet
points.
Looking forward to jumping into probably my first Animal Crossing game.
Oh, really? The new one would be your first one?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. I've never played it on the GameCube or the 3DS or anything. Pokemon Gen 8.
Yeah. I am really excited for that, considering the potential that Let's Go showed. Battletoads are apparently coming back next year. So
Toe Jam and Earl's coming back next year.
Yeah. Yes. Apparently Fortnite, like the full version of Fortnite, is going to be released next year.
Yeah.
A third Luigi's Mansion? Yeah.
Maybe Metroid Prime 4?
Well, right. Any Nintendo game comes with a caveat that it could also not come out, you know?
Right. Well, I mean, we do have Yoshi coming out.
Mm-hmm. We are apparently getting a Star Wars game from Respawn Entertainment, the company behind Titanfall. So that's exciting. Don't know anything that it could entail, but I hope it's good.
The new Doom? The new Ori?
Mm. Oh, yeah. I know you're hyped for Ori.
I love Ori.
It's not a game, but just can we talk about the fact that Detective Pikachu is coming out next year? what do you think is going to be? Here's the really big gaming question of 2019. What will be better, the Detective Pikachu movie or the live action Sonic the Hedgehog movie?
Do you know? I really don't know. Like, I am like excited to see the Sonic the Hedgehog trailer, just to kind of, you know, just see what it got for me. But no, I mean, the trailer for Detective Pikachu, man, that blew me away. I never knew that I needed that in my life.
I was always like excited but a little wary, but like that just looks like everything I could have wanted it to be.
Yeah.
And maybe in storyline or narrative. Like, you know, because we don't know how exactly they're going to approach it. But it just seems like the way they've set up, the little world they've created within that trailer looks so appealing that I feel like the only way they could really botch it is if they completely get the spirit of Pokemon wrong. So we got to see. We'll have to see.
Yep.
And as far as Sonic the Hedgehog goes, you know, I love me the good Sonic games. Sonic as a property is always in this vortex of just making me sigh. So I don't know how the movie's going to be. We'll see. I'm still just kind of like hoping that it's not just going to be a remake of the Illumination Studios movie Hop, because it's literally almost the same premise. It's James Marsden meeting a talking thing and going on an adventure. It's like, ugh. How about you, Josh? Mentally, are you into the Sonic movie?
I'm intrigued. It can't be as bad as any of the Resident Evil movies.
There is a bar. Yes.
when it comes to video game movies, I mean, like my standards are pretty low. So like the fact that Rampage I thought was a pretty good movie, like, shocked me. I didn't see Tomb Raider because I heard it was meh. But I mean, I'm interested. Give me a trailer. I'll probably end up seeing it because it'll be fun.
You're a trailer guy first and foremost. You need that little you need that little taste.
Yeah. That has been the last episode of the Cast of the Past for 2018. Hopefully with Thanos snapping his fingers, he didn't delete all of these games from our history.
Hopefully. Well, yeah, we got a bright future ahead of us, so let's hope it's a good one.
Well, that's all the time that we could spend in the past, so thanks for listening. Subscribe to A Cast of the Past on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify. And stay up to date with A Cast of the Past by making sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. There you can be the first to know when new episodes drop, as well as joining in the discussion on all things video games. See you in the future.